Welcome. It's February 6th, and it's a beautiful spring day. Welcome to We the People. I'm sorry. Is that the right day? You looked at me funny. Good morning.
I just didn't know why you were telling people the weather.
Oh, it's a beautiful day because it's a beautiful day, and I'm super happy about it.
But we're in a tiny box that's really hot, and we can't even see the sun from here.
But I know you can out there. Welcome to We the People, brought to you by the Reading Tea Party. It's Aaron and Elizabeth, and we've got Nate and Chandler this morning. Chandler is our sound engineer, and Nate's in training, and he's also going to tell a little bit about his show this evening. But currently, the We the People show this morning is brought to you by All Temp Tactical Lube, North State Tax Consultants, and Miller Auto Transport. And for those of you that do want to dial in and give us a call, the number is 605-4567. If you want to chat with us or listen to it streaming live, go to Reading Tea Party and click on the radio show.
How's that for a mouthful? Woo! So it's Ronald Reagan's 100th birthday.
Yes, it is.
And it's my sister's birthday, but she's not 100.
I'm sure she's glad to know that.
Yeah, I texted her this morning at 1 o'clock so I could roust her out of bed.
Did she get out of bed?
No, she didn't respond.
Gee, I wonder why.
I don't know. Kind of killed all my fun. So we've got Jim Nielsen calling in this morning. He should be in between about 8 and 9. He's driving this morning, but he said he'd call in. And he was going to talk about Ronald Reagan because he knew him and worked with him and has a lot of good information there. So I saw him at a Chamber of Commerce thing on Friday, and he said, hey, how about we talk about Ronald Reagan? I thought, perfect. 100th birthday? Absolutely.
And, you know, if you've never read up on Ronald Reagan, I highly recommend it. I've got about 8 books. Every time I see one, I grab it. Very interesting man. You know, he started off as a Democrat back when being a Democrat meant better things than it probably does today. But he changed course somewhere along the line, and that motivated him to make a real change in the country. So, really interesting individual. Do you ever wonder if what Nancy Reagan thinks about the state of the country right now, Aaron?
Oh, we're getting the... It takes a village to do a radio program, just in case you were curious. We have Bill, my husband Bill, out there on the cell phone, so he's given us the Jim is calling in 5 minutes warning. So if you still want to get coffee and you don't want to hear us yammer, you've got a few minutes. Hey, in the second half of the hour, we're doing something different today. Well, we're doing 2 things different. One is we have to take a bunch of commercials. So that's kind of a drag. But we have to be like a real radio station and take actual commercials. And Nate's got to figure out how to do it. Chandler's been coasted, man. No commercials. Now Nate's in the big chair, and he's got to figure out how to make us take commercials. And then the second half of the hour, 9 to 10, we're going to be talking to Dr. Michael Kaufman, the author of Rescuing a Broken America. And Elizabeth and I both have our copies here.
Yep.
All marked up and ready to roll.
Yep.
So you're not going to want to miss that. He's also going to be here in 2 weeks. He'll be speaking at the Reading Tea Party meeting Monday night, February 14th. What a great Valentine's Day outing.
Yes, absolutely. Because he talks about how to heal America constitutionally. And this guy's got quite a resume of experience and degrees and, you know, quite the expert, biologically speaking, in forestry and
He single-handedly thwarted the biodiversity treaty.
It wasn't an hour before it went to vote?
Oh, yeah. Within minutes. So that's going to be an awesome thing to learn about. We're going to get all into that. And what else? We've got like 30 seconds left. Now we're getting the big hand sign here.
Well, we've got a lot on the plate this morning, so definitely tune in. And again, if you do want to chat or stream live, go to readingteaparty.com.
Yeah,
and click on radio show.
And plan to call in before 5 minutes before the hour, because our guests are going to have to come and go today. 605-4567 is the number. So let's see. We're going to zoom off for our first commercial here. You are listening to KCNR 1460 AM, Shasta Reading, the home of Free Fire Media.
Welcome back. You're listening to We the People, brought to you by the Reading Tea Party. We're at KCNR 1460. Remember, if you want to give a call in, don't wait till the last minute. The number is 605-4567. So before we get any further and we speak with Assemblyman Nielsen, I want to talk to Nate and Chandler a little bit about their show tonight, Sovereign Minds. If you haven't tuned into that, that's at 8 o'clock on Sunday evenings at KCNR. Good morning, guys.
Good morning, ladies. Thank you for having us.
What's up tonight?
I work here now, so.
Yeah, you do, Nate. Congrats.
Well, we're having the Elite's pastor, Lindsey Williams, coming on again. He's made a lot of predictions in the past. He's getting a lot of good insider information from the Elite oil exec, top oil execs are telling him everything going on. So he has, last time he was on our show, he predicted that they were looking for chaos in the Middle East.
And that's, I think they've got it.
Chaos in the Middle East, boy, what are the odds of that?
Yeah, so but that's what they wanted, and now they're getting it, it looks like. He said 4 months, and that was about 4 months ago. So.
Okay, so if you want a little prophecy about what's to come in the Middle East, it might be worth listening to him tonight.
Yeah, he goes on a bunch of big like Alex Jones show all the time. Mm-hmm. And he's on media all the time now, so we're really lucky to have him again. So.
Great.
Yeah, he's pretty good. We had a good show last time. I don't know. You guys heard it last time,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, we
did hear it last
we
time.
Yep.
Definitely want to tune in.
Yeah, we tune in with our dinner.
So we're going to find out what's going to happen after that? See, because I'm thinking if this guy's right every time, maybe we should just blame him. Maybe it's his fault.
He's just trying to get the word out.
Oh, okay.
Maybe he's misleading us, but he's right. So.
No, but if he knows, I mean, and then it happens.
Yeah.
How does he know that? Yeah. Chaos in the Middle East, though.
Being
what are
told that.
Really and truly, what are the odds? So what do you guys have coming after that, you know?
Yeah, we have Sheriff Richard Mack on next week.
Ooh, yay, we like him.
And then
he's awesome.
We have people like Tex Mars coming. We have Michael Tesserin book.
Wait, who's Tex Mars?
Oh, he's also another conspiracy theorist guy, but they're big.
Oh, he's awesome.
But he goes also on Alex Jones a lot, and he talks about, more alien-type things,
yeah,
too. But
ooh, coast-to-coast radio
right,
stuff.
Mm. Right.
So just for a distinction, we the people down the middle of the road, Sovereign Minds, slightly around the edges.
Right.
Something for everybody.
It's just interesting information anyway.
Yeah, absolutely.
These guys have been doing it for a long time, 20 years plus. So we also have John Perkins. He's a New York bestseller for a year and a half. He's, what's that called?
Confessions of an Economic Hitman.
Right, that was his first
ooh
book. And he's written another book now coming out.
I believe.
Hoodwinked coming out now.
Oh, yeah, I've heard of that one.
That's his third one? Or
yeah, it's coming out.
I've heard of that, yeah.
So,
I think he wrote one called Invisible Empire also.
He's been around. So,
great, John Perkins.
We got a lot of good people coming up. It's
sounds
pretty cool.
Sounds great, you guys.
Check him out on YouTube. Just or Google his name.
Yeah, Michael Tesserin.
He's got quite a few videos
he's
out.
He's really good, too. You should Google him.
Is he is Tesserin?
Tesserin, yes.
Okay.
T-S-A-I-R-N.
Okay.
Very
sounds
nice.
Like, sounds like a full plate.
It is. So we're getting a lot of people booked. We also have Sylvia McMillan.
Yeah,
she's going to be coming on here.
Sylvia
Milligan?
Milligan.
Yeah,
Milligan,
from Recreation Outdoor Coalition.
Uh-huh. National
She's on
Forest.
The show before.
Yeah,
yeah, she's been on
she's
several
definitely
times.
Spreading the word. She works a lot with Fred Kelly Grant and the Forest Service road closures. And
yeah, actually, we got Elena something. She's coming on talking about GMOs.
And that
also
is, what's a GMO?
Government, genetically modified organisms. It's in our food. Everybody's growing it.
So that's the Monsanto knife.
Yeah,
yes.
Monsanto.
Yeah.
Exactly.
There's a very good documentary out called Food Inc. I don't know if you guys
I've heard of it.
I watched it a couple weeks ago, and it's a very good documentary. It's kind of disturbing at the same time, but
and if for those of you listening, check out Monsanto, Monsanto. Really interesting. If you Google that, you'll come up with websites that give you some really down and dirty details on what's behind the scenes at Monsanto, and they're kind of cornering the market a little bit.
Yep.
It's a little scary. That's our food.
And now
and they have so much power.
Yeah,
so
a
huge.
Lot. A lot.
Well, the top.
They have a team of 75 lawyers that are working constantly for them, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And the top three organic companies are also going to let them slide. And now it's coming out that they're friends. The owners of them are friends with the FDA owners who are friends with the heads of the FDA are friends with the heads of the Monsanto
company.
Yeah,
follow the money, folks. Yeah. Follow the money.
Uh-oh.
Yep.
Here, Nate's got to multitask now. He's got to answer the phone and try to talk about his program.
Hey, thanks, guys. So everybody tune in tonight. 8 o'clock.
The ringer.
KCNR.
That's great. So, we try to do a team approach around here. Get a bunch of stuff done all at the same time. So let's see if we can push the button and get Assemblyman Nielsen on the phone.
Coffin.
I don't know. Is he on there?
Yeah.
He is. Well, that's exciting.
Well,
sure.
We can chat for a minute.
Do you
want
to talk to him now? We don't want to talk to him.
Hello, Dr. Kaufman.
Good afternoon. I guess it's good morning for you, isn't it?
We're good morningers. Yeah, we thought we were going to hear from you around 9 o'clock.
I tried to get out a little bit early. I would even been on time, except we got behind snowplowers that were going about 20 miles an hour.
Now, Dr. Kaufman, where are you located right
now?
You're in Maine.
Bangor, Maine.
Okay. How's the weather back there?
Well, we got about 6 inches of snow, wet, heavy snow last night.
Okay.
So everybody's cleaning up.
Okay, well, I got to tell you, out here in Redding, California, it's about 65 degrees outside, and we're a little toasty here in the studio. I don't mean to brag. I'm sorry.
Yes, that's all right. I'll be out there in a couple days.
We're looking forward to it. So we've got our California State Assemblyman Jim Nielsen on the phone, Dr. Kaufman. Can we chat with him for a few minutes?
Sure, by all means.
He was going to pop in and talk about Ronald Reagan, since it was Ronald Reagan's 100th birthday.
So feel free to join the conversation, and we'll chat about Ronald Reagan for a while.
Assemblyman Nielsen, right. We've got Dr. Michael Kaufman on the other line. He's hanging on, and we're going to talk about Ronald Reagan with you. How's it going?
Good Sunday morning, we the people.
Good morning. It sounds like you might be on the road.
I'm driving down the valley. I hope to get parked by later in the afternoon to watch the Super Bowl, though.
Well, I hope you make it.
We will. Yeah, it's great Sunday morning and a day to remember Ronald Reagan, a truly great governor, a truly great president, and a truly great man.
Now, is it true that you knew him personally, Assemblyman?
Yes, I did, way back in his years as governor. In fact, I was just farming and getting active in politics, I guess, as an advocate for agriculture, and got acquainted with him and many of the people in his cabinet then, and we've maintained the friendships over the years. Probably have got a lot closer to him when I decided to run for the state senate in 78, and Ronald Reagan came to headline the fundraiser for me in Santa Rosa. You know, I knew I was a pretty good candidate for senate when Reagan agreed to come, but a couple of weeks later, Ed Asner and Jane Fonda went on TV attacking me. Then I knew I was a really, really good candidate.
you were a big deal then.
You're known by your friends and your enemies, and in that case, my enemies were very helpful to me.
No kidding. Hey, before we get into more of the story, unfortunately, today is the day we get to start learning how to take all our commercials.
Bummer. They're making us.
So, could we come back to both you guys in about 2 minutes?
Sure.
That'd be awesome. You're listening to KCNR 1460 AM, Shasta Redding, the home of Free Fire Media.
Satellite, your dish, safe, reliable auto care. Advanced Automotive, providing safe, reliable auto care for their customers and our community. And Tammy Thomas, your Edward Jones advisor, making sense of investing. Boomer Tech Radio, now at 1 o'clock Saturday afternoons, KCNR 1460, the home of free.
Hey, these guys know how to wake us up on a Sunday morning. Great job, you guys. Welcome back to We the People, brought to you by the Redding Tea Party. If you want to give us a call, 605-4567.
All right, so we're back with Assemblyman Jim Nielsen, driving down the road. You still in there? Uh-oh. He flipped a switch. Or not flipped a switch. There he is. He's back.
Yes, we're always on the road.
aren't we always?
So, you're like Willie Nelson.
There you go.
Without the tax problems. Hey, so talk to us about Ronald Reagan some more.
I've lost you.
Sorry. Can you hear us now?
Yeah, I got it. You got it.
So, Assemblyman Nielsen, tell us a little bit about your days with him in the California State Capitol. How was he as a governor?
Ronald Reagan came in 1966 with a huge deficit tweaked by Governor Pat Brown. He wanted to, quote, squeeze, cut, trim. And he truly did just that. Although a few things that he did agree to ended up creating later problems, like additional signing bill to create automatic cost of living increases that, frankly, just a year ago, in this budget crisis in California, we were able to finally get stopped in a number of areas. But Ronald Reagan truly got California moving again, and most importantly, it inculcated a sense that government was too big, too intrusive in our lives. And I think that that pattern that he established, the governor here, trying to make that point, get government under control and less involved in all of our lives, that translated into his great success later on as President of the United States. You know, he briefly flirted with the presidency and ran against President Ford, I can remember that. But when he was governor, he was never distracted by such matters. He did make that favorite son run, but he tended to business and ended up being a very good governor of the state of California. Then he turned out later to be one of the greatest presidents in the history of the United States.
Now, Assembly Nielsen, one thing that crosses my mind frequently is I think about Nancy Reagan, and I'm assuming that you were acquainted with her as well. What do you suppose is running through her mind these days as she sees the direction that the country has gone in?
Nancy Reagan, and I would only check, and I did not know Nancy as well as the president, but she's despairing. What her husband accomplished has been besmirched, denigrated by the successors. In fact, one of the ironies, the person that Ronald Reagan defeated to become president was one Jimmy Carter. And this Obama presidency is so similar to Jimmy Carter's presidency. I call it the diminished presidency of Jimmy Carter, and now Barack Obama's diminishing the presidency equally. And Nancy Reagan would mourn that. She was the true, loyal, supportive wife. Ronald Reagan was the everyman, warm-hearted, friendly, touched America's hearts and souls. Nancy bore the brunt of the attacks that hit him, and he didn't let them bother him. Ronald Reagan let them just roll off. I think Nancy bore a great burden. But it was always a very special thing knowing the value of their love and how precious it was, something Marilyn and I share. You could see it in them, and how he spoke of Nancy, his writings, how he missed her. If she was going out to California, if he was headed somewhere else, he'd always talk about missing his roommate. I remember at one of the Republican conventions, Nancy speaking, and Ronald Reagan's was back in the hotel suite, and they showed his picture, and she was waving to him. And it was always dear to me that as he passed, just before he passed away, and I obviously was not there, but reported that he opened his eyes and looked at Nancy. It seemed to me to be so appropriate and special that the last thing he saw on this earth was his wife that he loved so much.
I find it fascinating that the popularity of President Reagan as an individual and as President of the United States has resurged. He's probably as popular now as he ever was.
Oh, vastly more so. Even liberal historians grudgingly grant he's one of our 10 top presidents of all time. I remember in the 80s, during the Iran-Contra, President Reagan was being so viciously and unfairly attacked. And I was having dinner in Sacramento with his daughter, Maureen Reagan, who's quite a friend of mine. Her husband still lives in Sacramento. You know, she passed away a few years ago. We were having dinner, and Maureen was feeling very sad about how her dad was being maligned. And I offered to her, you know, Maureen, history will be kind to your father. And she sent me a nice note. I have it in my autograph book that she wrote. Just to store it there, of course. But she thanked me for how I lifted her spirits, acknowledging that history would be kind to Ronald Reagan. Indeed, history is kind to Ronald Reagan, deservedly so. He stood up to the Soviet Union and decided we were going to win the war, the Cold War. He decided we were going to win the Cold War, and that was a major reason why we won the Cold War. Ronald Reagan made a concerted decision that we were not just going to accept world communism and Russian domination, and he had a plan to do so, along with a number of other circumstances, to help a folks like Margaret Thatcher. That happened, and Mr. Gorbachev take down that wall. I must tell you a story. There's a Russian emigre in Sacramento that I know very well, was talking to him about Ronald Reagan. He said, you know, I was in a Belgrade prison, a political prison, And they had a TV on, and that came on, Ronald Reagan saying, "Mr. Gorbachev, take down that wall." I was chained in a prison cell. He must have been a very young man at the time. And he said, "You know, it lifted our spirits so very much." And he said, "Senator, 2 weeks later, I was in the United States Ambassador's office at the embassy, chained. And the ambassador told the guards to take those chains off. Literally, his chains came off before the wall came down. But how significant a story that is. And 100,000 Russian immigrants, Eastern European, are around the Sacramento area alone. And they left. Even though there is freedom there, they came here to be in the land of freedom. And Ronald Reagan's greatest lasting legacy is he was a champion of freedom. His stand for freedom did free the lives of millions of other beings. What a blessing.
That is awesome. We are going to let you get on your drive, if that's cool, and we're going to have to take another commercial. And,
thank you very much for calling in.
When you get back to your calendar, we need to have a time to talk to you about the prison system and the budget. There's a ton of stuff we need to talk to you about.
We'll look forward to it. We will get it on schedule. Have a happy Sunday, everybody.
Thank you so much, and happy birthday, Ronald Reagan. You're listening to KCNR, 1460 AM, Shasta Redding, the home of Free Fire Media.
That is a great way to start our second hour, or actually our second half hour of our first hour. Welcome back to We the People, brought to you by the Redding Tea Party. Just finished up with Assemblyman Nielsen, wishing Ronald Reagan a very happy 100th birthday and recognizing his contributions to this great country. If you want to give us a call, the number is 605-4567. To chat or stream live, go to RedingTeaParty.com and click on Radio Show.
All right. So for those of you who didn't grow up in the 70s, that was Foreigner, and the name of the song was Urgent. And, you know, there's nothing more urgent than what's going on in our country. Good grief. So Dr. Kaufman has written a book. He's written several, but the one I have in my hand is Rescuing a Broken America, Why America is Deeply Divided. And I'll tell you what, the first paragraph of the preface tells you everything. It says, "In another life, or so it seems, I was once a college professor and a research scientist. Never in my wildest imagination did I believe that I would ever need to write a book like this. On the other hand, never in my wildest imagination did I believe the American culture would ever become corrupted by an ideology so dangerous that it could destroy America as a free society." So, Dr. Kaufman, what was going through your head while you were doing that?
Well, that's a very good question. It was back in the late 1980s. I was leading a multi-million dollar research effort on the effects of climate change and acid rain on our nation's ecosystems when the Clean Air Act was reauthorized in 1991. And we had put in several million dollars towards this effort. The government had put in about $5 billion and it had some very good results. And the Clean Air Act was actually something that didn't follow the science at all. Totally different. Much, much more stronger than was even needed based on what the science was showing needed to be controlled about clean air at that particular time. And as a result, I was shocked because I just spent 5 years of my life doing this research that was very clear as to what is the dangers in our atmospheric pollution and so forth. And there was nothing, there was any resemblance to what the science was showing in the reauthorization of the Clean Air Act was purely coincidental. It was totally political. That made me wonder what in the world is going on. Why is it that Congress or the dominating party at the time did not want to have a Clean Air Act that was actually based on science rather than their own ideology? So I started to investigate it. Didn't take long before I realized there is a huge, huge agenda out there led by the progressives in this country that is extremely destructive, just as I put in my preface concerning the danger that this nation is facing. And it was then that I decided I had to leave my job and to try to help the American people understand what's going on. Thankfully, the Obama administration has provided the catalyst for the Tea Party movement and so forth to take off. And people are waking up and becoming educated. And I think it was going to be a very different 2012 election because of that. Once people understand how dangerous this movement is and how badly they have corrupted this country, put us in a $14 trillion deficit, is entirely related to the progressive agenda. I hope that by the end of the election in 2013, there isn't a progressive left in Congress or the state legislatures.
We can only hope. Dr. Kaufman, you basically tie in the environmental movement to private property rights, and that's a big part of your book that we're referring to. But you do have a section on the high cost of Rousseau socialism. Can you explain what Rousseau socialism is?
Yes, one of the things that I've done in the book is to try to help people understand why we're having the deep division that we are having, why the progressive ideology does not work. And so I go back to the originators of the kind of progressive ideology that we're experiencing right now. Our Constitution was based on the writings of John Locke. I think probably most of your listening audience probably remember that, either through recent discussions or basically back when they were going through school. And the writings of John Locke are really almost fundamentally in the Declaration of Independence, and certainly they're foundational to the Constitution, because he basically laid out a government structure in which the people were sovereign over the government. And right after the death of John Locke, who was in England, Jean-Jacques Rousseau from France started to write his particular dissertations and so forth, which are based on state sovereignty over the individual, a complete reversal of the model of government that John Locke laid down. That is what's trying to be forced on the American people today, is the John Locke model, where the government is all supreme over the individual. The individual has no choice in the matter whatsoever other than what the government gives that person. And as a consequence, we see this in Europe. Most of the European socialist governments, in fact, the socialism is based on the John Locke model. Communism is based on the Jean-Jacques Rousseau model, as well as fascism. Most people think of fascism as being on the far right and communism being on the far left. No, they're both far left. Both of them. The elite in this country has tried to convince the American people that fascism is on the right, and it's not. It's just a minor difference between that and communism. And it's all based on the Jean-Jacques Rousseau model. And once you begin to understand that, and begin to understand that it's the government that's trying to assume total dominance over the state governments, over the local governments, and over the citizens, can you really start to sharply see why we're in such deep division? Because we have two worldviews that are at war with each other, and they are trying to force a model of government that is diametrically opposed to the one that we have over the top of the one that we have. And of course, there's going to be conflict. And when you draw that much power into the federal government, in fact, Jefferson, after going to France and seeing what the French Revolution had done, he was horrified. He went there thinking the French Revolution paralleled that which happened in America. It did not. It was totally and radically different. They instituted the concept of the state being sovereign over the individual. He saw what had happened in that situation and came back, and in some of his letters and so forth, he basically said that when all power is drawn to Washington as the source of all power, our government will become as venal, as oppressive as the one from which we have just separated, and that is what we're seeing today. As the federal government, who is not supposed to have the kind of powers that they have drawn to themselves, becomes the supreme government of all governments and over the people, we are seeing it become venal and it's oppressive. You're seeing it there in Northern California. The logging industry has been shut down because of all of this green ideology that's taken over that really has no basis in science whatsoever. It's nothing more than an ideology, and as a consequence, people are being put out of work. The mills have closed down or are closing down. All of these things are related to the fact that nature is God. And until we realize that, until we understand that what we're dealing with is a green religion, what's called pantheism, it, we'll never be able to succeed in bringing reality back into the matrix and managing our forests and natural resources in a way that's productive, both for the environment and for people.
It's a little bit spooky how tightly aligned that is with what's going on. We need to take a little bit of a break here, unfortunately, but we will come back to you in about a minute and a half. Thank you very much. You're listening to KCNR 1460 AM, Shasta Redding, the home of Free Fire Media.
Welcome back to We the People, brought to you by the Redding Tea Party. Very quickly, this show is sponsored by Alltemp Tactical Lube, North State Tax Consultants, and Miller Auto Transport. Give us a call, 605-4567.
And you can find all that information on the website. Go to RedingTeaParty.com, click on Radio Show. And Coach Bob sent me a message on the chat room that it's not the commercials that are the difficulty. It's us taking the commercials. We didn't plan that very well. So thank you to the advertisers. Absolutely. We didn't mean the advertisers were a problem. It's just the timing thing, trying to do the timing thing. So as we try to do the timing thing, we are back with Dr. Kaufman to hear more about wherever he'd like to take us.
Well, Dr. Kaufman, I do have a question.
Oh, forget it. It's where Elizabeth's taking
us. Well, you know, this book is amazing. You guys have to check it out. Rescuing a Broken America, Why America is Deeply Divided, and How to Heal It Constitutionally. And I noticed that you and Fred Kelly Grant both share a very strong desire to bring power back to the 10th Amendment. Can you talk about that a little bit?
You bet. The 10th Amendment has been basically crushed over the last 100 years since the 17th Amendment was voted in back in the 1917, I think it was. Basically, by deceiving the American people as to how wonderful it would be to take the ability to appoint senators to the U.S. Senate from the state and turn that over to the people themselves. What happened was in the process, and why it was originally set up, was that it was set up so that the state elected people to go and fill the senatorial positions, was that it gave the state a voice in the matter. You remember it was the states that set up the federal government. The federal government did not set up the states. The state is basically superior or supreme or sovereign over the federal government. Always has been. Always was intended to be. By having the state legislatures nominate and elect the actual representatives to the Senate, the state had a voice in what kind of bills were being passed. Now, with the people actually directly electing the senators, you have nothing more than a kind of a watered-down version of the U.S. House of Representatives. And the states themselves have no voice in the type of congressional legislation that's passed. That is starting to change now. There is a strong movement to get back or to basically get rid of the 17th Amendment and give the states the right back to vote on or electing the senators to the U.S. Congress. And I hope it passes, because until the states are actually able to say yay or nay to different bills that have horrible, horrible impacts on the states, one of the things that the states have been complaining about for decades is the fact that these unfunded mandates that Congress just flippantly passes and then makes the states pay for them, actually executing, carrying them out, sometimes impossible types of regulations. And that's got to stop. We've got to reverse that tendency and get back to a constitutional Republican form of government, or else we are going to lose this. On the other hand, the Rousseau concept demands that the federal government be supreme over the states. That's what Arizona is all about. The lawsuit against Arizona and the immigration, or illegal immigration issue. And the state is, the federal government is attempting to actually show that it is supreme over the state of Arizona. I'm really glad to see that that's about something like 26 states now are actually considering implementing their own laws, much like Arizona did, in which case it's going to be able to trump the federal government. Now, in that process, we haven't used it for well over 100 years. There's a process called the nullification process. I don't know if any of you have ever heard of it, and I hadn't up until 6 months or so ago, but it's a process that was started by Thomas Jefferson back in 1898, I believe it was, or 1798. whereby if Congress passes an unconstitutional law, they don't even have to wait for the Supreme Court. The state can declare that it's unconstitutional, and therefore they're not going to implement it. And there are a number of states right now that are looking to do that. If this does not happen within the Supreme Court, the Obamacare issue, they may go ahead and just basically declare that it's null and void in the individual states because it is not constitutional. There is no way you can make it constitutional. The Supreme Court is now starting to be loaded with the progressive ideology, and I'm not sure what's going to happen with Kennedy, how he would vote if it ever got to the Supreme Court. But right now, there's a lot of states that says they aren't going to implement it one way or the other. That's nullification. It's a very tried and true way of basically saying the federal government's getting out of control, and our state is going to rein in by ignoring this law that was just passed because it's unconstitutional. Now, there's a lot of things that has to happen for that to work. You don't use this indiscriminately. This is a last resort type of action because it can be misused and abused, and it was during the mid-1800s, during the Civil War, pre-Civil War, where a lot of the southern states basically said that the anti-slavery laws were unconstitutional, when in fact they weren't. Most people do not realize that they had slave laws built, or slave considerations built right into the Constitution, that we were not going to be able to do that after some number of years. I can't remember how many years it is. So it was not unconstitutional law at all, but a lot of the southern states used nullification to declare it was. That was one of the friction points that led to the Civil War. So it has to be used very carefully in how it's going to be actually applied. Now, Fred Kelly Grant, just by coincidence, so we were on the radio yesterday together, and he basically had, and I've taken many classes from him in the past, he basically, about 25 years ago, some ranchers there in southern Idaho asked him to try to help them because the Bureau of Land Management was basically going to be passing regulations that would put them out of business. This is not unusual for the federal government. The federal government is good for passing regulations that could put people out of business. And he started to look at the law and basically found that there is a provision within the NEPA process, the National Environmental Protection Act, Policy Act, that basically said that the Secretary of Interior had to listen to local governments and had to consider their own plans before the Department of Interior, be it the BLM or any of the others, actually took action in implementing any regulation. And if there was a conflict in the regulation with the local regulations, then the federal government had to take every action possible to be able to reconcile those two. The monkey was on the government's shoulders, not on the local shoulders. And what has happened is, and he told me yesterday, there are well over 100 counties now in the country that are using this, and they've been extremely successful in actually stopping the implementation of federal regulations that basically are punitive to the local citizenry of any particular county or any political jurisdiction in which the councilmen or the selectmen or the whoever it is, are elected by the people. It could be a school district. It could be a water district. It could be anything like that. But there has to be an elected form of government that governs that particular governing unit. They can actually challenge the federal government on any implementation of any regulation, and it's been astonishingly successful. The first got off, there was a couple of lawsuits, but basically the federal government doesn't even try anymore because that's the law. The NEPA process, most of your federal laws have these provisions in them, and there's no use going to court because you're going to get beat every single time. And even to the point where even state activities can be affected. And I like to use the concept of what happened down in Texas these last 2 years. You heard about I don't know if you've heard about it, but the Trans-Texas Highway that was going to be part of the NAFTA superhighway from the southern part of Mexico all the way up into Canada. Very, very limited access. Basically the port of for investigating things and so forth would be in Kansas City or St. Louis. That would be the only place where you would be able to actually transfer things, that type of thing. It's a half mile wide right away, taking out huge chunks of land, just literally tens of thousands and hundreds of thousands of acres of productive land would be taken out of productivity and put into this super highway. And they actually had were ready to start shoveling dirt. A contractor out of Spain called Centra was the contractor. They were going to have the right to impose tariffs and so forth for 50 years, tolls for 50 years, and build this highway. A $90 billion project. $90 billion just in the state of Texas. And the state governor, Perry, was all in favor of it, and so were the Republicans, and most of the Democrats, too, because it looked like such a sweetheart deal. Well, what Fred Kelly Grant did is he found a provision within the state law that said that the Department of Transportation, who was in charge of this project, had to consider local input. And so they got a couple of towns, a couple of school districts, and so forth, that were in the path of this particular effort, and then challenged them both on the Department of Transportation law as well as the environmental impact statement executed by the National or U.S. Department of Transportation, overseen by the Environmental Protection Agency and the Department of Interior. What happened was that they won on both cases. They did not do a satisfactory EIS, environmental impact statement, and the state law itself allowed these local governments to basically say, no, you're not going to come through our jurisdiction. And the project, this $90 billion project, stopped dead in its tracks. It's gone. It's history now.
So basically, it's using their own laws and regulations against them.
That's correct. And it's interesting that it's always been on the books. It's been there since 1973 when NEPA was passed. But nobody was aware of it. It's just one of the environmentalists were. They had actually used NEPA because it also allows these non-governmental organizations to enter into the discussion as a stakeholder, and they had been using NEPA for decades to be able to crush local opposition and so forth in any project that the environmentalists wanted to see happen. And now, because of the standing issue that the local communities actually have far more power than the environmentalists could ever dream of having, and they're being successful wherever it's being applied.
Well, I'll tell you what, it seems that anymore that the environmentalists aren't really environmentalists. I mean, as you said in the first part of your book, it didn't really have anything to do with science, just like the spotted owl, where you're in the land of the spotted owl.
Right.
And it didn't have anything to do with the spotted owl. And the problem that keeps happening is conservatives, we fight on fact. So we think it's about the spotted owl, so we begin working on science and stuff. Meanwhile, they mow
right.
us over because it wasn't about that. In the,
yeah, it's a convenient
yeah, it had
use.
Nothing to do with it. So when we get into this the second half of the hour, the second half of the show, the second hour here, I want you to really paint people a picture, because you've done such an excellent job in your book about those philosophical differences, because I think a lot of people, political correctness has allowed that Rousseau model to seem like it's more...
It gives it legitimacy.
Well, it gives it legitimacy, but I think it makes us seem a lot more like polite society in a way. And so I think people are sort of guilted. I guess that's a good word. They're guilted into it. If you're not looking out for everybody else and you don't, but then at the end of the day, all of a sudden you find yourself, living in a rabbit hutch above a transit station. It's
you
like,
got it. Absolutely.
I don't think we do the homework really. We don't run that logic out all the way.
We don't, unfortunately, because we have busy lives and therefore we leave it up to other people to fight the battles, but there aren't any other people, or haven't been up until now.
Totally. Well,
if you're interested, by the way, in the book, you can find out more about that book by going to rescuingamericabook.com. Rescuingamericabook.com.
And literally, folks, if you haven't picked this book up, I highly encourage you to get it, because when you pick that book up and start reading it, you can't put it down.
No, it's fantastic. And the other thing, too, for people who live in the Reading area, you're going to be out here for the logging conference. You're coming in Tuesday, and from what I know of your schedule, you'll be speaking at the logging conference breakfast People can get tickets at the Reading Tea Party tomorrow night. They're $25, and you're speaking Thursday morning down at the Gaia Hotel. Just in case you didn't know, that's what you're doing Thursday morning. You are speaking at the Logging Conference breakfast, and then Friday you're going to be up in Siskiyou County speaking in Yreka. That'll be Friday night, and then we have Mary Wilson over on the coast, over in Crescent City. And she's going to be hosting you over there. I don't even think you know this yet. And you guys?
No, I do not know that.
Yeah, so you guys are cruising over to the Redwoods on Saturday. And probably when we talk to you next week on the radio for a recap of your week and the other ideas you have for us, you'll be over in the Redwoods checking it out. So
yes, I will. That's going to be very interesting because it's been probably 40 years since I've been in Crescent City.
Oh, that's fantastic. And then Monday, Valentine's Day, you're bringing your lovely wife back to Reading, and you're going to be at our meeting on Monday night. So,
absolutely.
And we usually guarantee a packed house.
We always guarantee a packed house.
Always.
So you should have, 300-400 people in there. So that'll be awesome. And then y'all
scurry
back to Maine.
And hopefully you'll have books available for people on Monday night at our meeting. Is that a possibility?
Yes, we have shipped a lot of books out there. Hopefully
Great.
We're going to have enough. But what we're going to do is if we run out on Monday, because yours is going to be the last meeting, we will take orders and ship the book to anyone who wants it for free shipping. It'll be the same price that they'll pay, but we'll ship it for free.
Awesome. All right, we're coming up on a hard break. Got to hear some news here. KCNR, 1460 AM. You're listening to Shasta Reading, the home of Free Fire Media.
Welcome back to We the People, brought to you by the Reading Tea Party. We're at KCNR 1460. If you want to give us a call, the number is 605-4567. To stream live or chat, go to readingteaparty.com and click on Radio Show. This morning we're talking with Dr. Michael Kaufman, author of Rescuing a Broken America, Why America is Deeply Divided. And Dr. Kaufman, we were going to bring you back into the second hour talking a little bit about the primary philosophical differences between the two belief systems.
Basically, the progressive ideology holds that the government is responsible for all evil in the world. They do not acknowledge the biblical idea that man has a sin nature to begin with. I can go on that, but understand that human nature plays no role in decisions that people make, and therefore, if a person's poor, they don't have a job, or whatever the case is, it's because of a bad and evil government. That's true with the progressive mentality for all of the other problems in the world, that the United States is the basis of all evil in the world that is happening. If we just were nice to other people, we would be able to get along with them, and everybody would be happy, and we would have the perfect utopian society. Unfortunately, that's not reality. We have human nature that basically is quite selfish, self-interest a lot, although self-interest can be pointed in the right direction. That's what capitalism, the pure form of capitalism, not the corrupted that we have now. If you have an opportunity to create a better widget that people are going to want to buy, you have the incentive to go ahead and put the man hours and the time and maybe the money, resources, and so forth into that widget to develop it, because you know you're going to get rewarded. Well, that's evil to a progressive ideology. It is bad that you would want to do something for yourself. And as a consequence, what you'll find in Europe, for instance, that's been under this ideology for well over 100 years now, very little actually comes out. Now, back earlier, there was a lot of inventions, a lot of discoveries and so forth made in Europe. That doesn't happen anymore. Now, they have good engineers and the practical application of highway building, skyscrapers and the rest of them, but the actual innovation, the creation of a brand new product that never existed before, it's been in the United States. The same thing in Japan. It's been the United States, not Japan. Now, Japan will refine it and make it actually better than what we first came out with, but the actual idea, the innovation, the entrepreneurship and so forth came from the United States, that had the ability to be incentivized, as it were, to have that incentive to go ahead and spend the time, the money, and everything else to make a new product. In fact, the whole concept of all of this comes with the absolute authority and legal protection of private property rights. In fact, I spend a great deal of time in the book discussing this because most people do not understand the only reason that we have the standard of living that we have in the Western world today is because of private property rights, especially here in the United States. There's been studies done of where they have actually looked at trying to secure private property rights in third world nations that are basically either totalitarian, dictatorship, you name it, where they do not have private property rights. And it's impossible. It's impossible to improve the conditions in that particular country until they are given some protection of private property rights, because once that happens, then a person will start to make investments in their property to improve it and so forth, which it'll increase the value of that property, and then they can borrow money against it to start a new business, to develop a new widget, to buy stocks or whatever the case might be, and profit from it because of the idea of providing incentive. But again, this is alien to a progressive mindset. They do not believe that. They believe that's evil. And as a consequence, they do everything they can to discourage that kind of activity. And they really honestly believe this, that they can have a group of people sitting in the central government deciding what is best for people in different outlying areas of their nation. In this country, it'd be different states and so forth. So they pass more and more and more and more regulations in order to control the activity of people that they see is probably going to be doing evil. If a person is allowed to do what he wants to do or she wants to do, that is going to result in a wrong-headed idea, and it's going to hurt other people around them, when in fact the whole concept of private property, capitalism, individual property rights, and all the rest is what made this nation the greatest nation in the history of the world. And we're shutting that down now through massive regulations. People don't understand it, but there's somewhere around 60 to 80,000 new pages of regulations that are written every single year in the United States at the federal level. 60 to 80,000 pages. Every business has to look at those and determine if it applies to them, and if it does, they have to meet those new standards. 80,000. Now, you need a crew to be able to go through 80,000 pages, and most small businesses don't have that, so more and more small businesses are falling to the wayside because they cannot meet that requirement to have two or three of their staff people doing nothing but going through the congressional record and determining what federal regulations apply to them every single year. And when you start doing that, really, it hurts. It really, really hurts. That's one of the reasons we're seeing such hesitation in trying to implement or trying to create new jobs, because people, these small businesses, still don't understand how the new Obamacare is going to affect them. It could be horrendous, and as a consequence, they're not really jumping into creating new jobs that could hurt them financially when the regulations finally are imposed. And this whole concept of political correctness is another thing that basically is driven by the progressives. Their view of the world is what they then begin to engender into society, that you can't say anything negative against homosexuals, you can't say anything negative against the presidency now that Obama's in it. They could say anything you wanted to when Bush was in it, but nonetheless, this is the ideology that's coming through, that any time that you oppose one of their ideas, you're a racist, they downgrade you, demonize you, whatever the case might be, until they whip you in line so that you're either silent or you agree with them. And of course, we're heading more and more and more as we get more of these regulations, as we're getting more indoctrinated in our general society to this kind of concept. We're moving into the twilight zone of governance. There's no way that we can survive. Absolutely no way, because what they have their principles established on is not real. It will never, ever work. It's never worked in the past. It will never work in the future. And yet they continue to do it because they know that they're absolutely right. There is no question in their mind that they are correct, because they constantly reinforce each other. And by the way, the population of these people is probably less than 20%. certainly less than 25% of the American population. And yet they're driving the entire ship because they're in key governmental positions, and they're in positions of power, as well as they're very, very vocal. They have thousands of these non-governmental organizations like ACORN constantly hammering on anybody that disagrees with them. Literally, somewhere in the neighborhood, George Soros, for instance, funds almost $500 million a year in supporting these organizations to tear down the American society. It's just astonishing what goes on. And if you begin to realize it, you do need to be acting right. You do need to look out after your fellow man and so forth. I mean, there are some good principles that they have. But at the same time, you've got to ignore all the hammering that goes on. We just got a new governor here in the state of Maine, for instance, a guy by the name of LePage, and he is very, very, very conservative. And the NAACP demanded that he attend their breakfast during the Martin Luther King Day. He refused. He'd always gone to that breakfast before because he wanted to. He would want to this year. But because they demanded that he go, he didn't go. Creates all kinds of headlines in the paper and so forth, and he said, I don't care what they say. I don't really care. They're no different than any other non-government organization, and if they're going to start demanding things of me because they think they're all powerful, then I'm not going to agree with them.
Dr. Kaufman,
well, I'm telling you.
I'm sorry to interrupt. As we talk about political correctness and this desire by the progressive movement to completely turn the tide on the direction that this country is heading, can you touch a little bit on the end result of this movement and the end result of the attempt to be politically correct? Because you talk a little bit about creating third world conditions in your book. Maybe that would hit home a little bit with people.
Well, I think you're probably sitting in one of the classic areas in this United States where you can see it happening around you there in the Redding or Northern California area. What happens is that this ideology is put into the force of law where, say, with the management of natural resources, one of the things that drives them is the idea that nature is God. And therefore, if you want to harvest a tree or something, you do it very gently. You go in there and you hardly leave a footprint on the land and take the trees out. Well, of course, that is not that can't be done economically, nor is it even biologically sound. I'm a biologist. I have a PhD in biology as well as ecosystem science. And let me assure you that this idea of taking a tree here and a tree there and so forth is now in state law and usually by the federal government and their national forests. Isn't going to cut it. There are times when you need to be ruthless with a forest if you want to keep it healthy. There's just no other, but it looks awful. It does look horrible. And as a consequence, the political correctness concept gets woven into law that then hurts the economy of different particular areas that are sensitive to that issue. And as before long, you have people out of work and you have a crumbling infrastructure, and I am convinced at this point we have a $14 trillion debt right now, and a $1.5 trillion deficit. Cutting their deficit down by $35 billion that the Republicans are looking for right now is a drop in the bucket. It will not help us. We need to be ruthless with the federal government, but it's not going to happen. And as a consequence, by this time next year, we're going to be in a world of hurt more. And if you look at the instructions of two of the leading ideologies of individuals, Cloward and Pliven, what they basically have done is designed a strategy, much like what the former communists used to do, is to go in and cause agitation. That's what ACORN was all about. Go in and cause agitation. Get people who really don't understand what's going on and get them mad because they're being abused in some way by the government or being abused by a company or whatever the case might be, and then demand more welfare benefits in this particular case. There can be other things. But anyway, destabilizing the situation. And this nation is being destabilized now because of this extreme debt. And there is every evidence that we could collapse the U.S. dollar in the next year or two. It's that close. I'm hoping it doesn't happen. but there are more and more of my financial advisors from around the country and around the world, actually, that are saying that it's inevitable now. I hope it's not inevitable, because I really do think if we shut down the spending machine of the federal government, we can reverse this. The question is there the will to do it? But it's the political correctness that basically is built into our laws that is causing so much damage. We're not allowing the people to be successful, because there's no incentive anymore to build a better widget. And what we're seeing here is the decay of our nation and the eventual collapse of the dollar. And they eventually, and this is what this agenda is really all about, they eventually want to create a world government. I mean, there's all kinds of documentation. Everybody else in the world understands this. If you've probably never heard of the word global government, the phrase global government.
No, we have, and the guys that are our engineers today, they do a program on Sunday nights, and it was just slightly before you tuned in, they were promoting their program, and they do all sorts of stuff on global governance.
Yeah, they're sitting here with big smiles on their faces, and they're nodding as you're saying all of this. They're quite happy with you at this moment, Dr. Kaufman.
No, that's good, because that's the ultimate objective. That's the end game.
It is.
It's to collapse the U.S. dollar, collapse the constitutional structure of this nation, and impose global governance and a world currency on all people of the world.
All right, now
that's
the
end game.
We got to take a little commercial here and listen to some of our advertisers. And when we come back, we'll talk about global governance. You're listening to KCNR 1460 AM, Shasta Redding, the home of Free Fire Media.
Welcome back to We the People, brought to you by the Redding Tea Party. We're coming up on the second half of our second hour. If you want to give us a call, the number is 605-7... I almost gave him my cell phone number. Whoops. 605-4567. No, don't call my cell phone number, because I'm not answering right now. Anyway, we're talking with Dr. Michael Kaufman, author of Rescuing a Broken America, Why America is Deeply Divided. And if I could take a moment and give you folks... I'm going to find a little bio on Dr. Kaufman. I want to tell you what his education is, because the man knows what he's talking about. Okay, just a second here. Dr. Michael Kaufman has taught and conducted research at the university level, as well as leading a multi-million dollar research effort to determine the effects of global warming on our nation's ecosystems. As president of the Environmental Perspectives Incorporated and CEO of Sovereignty International, he is now attempting to warn America of the dangers behind a warped worldview and a blind agenda to transfer power first to the federal government and ultimately to a world government. He played an instrumental role in stopping the ratification of the United Nations Convention on Biological Diversity 1 hour before the vote was scheduled to be voted on in the U.S. Senate. He's also written several books and produced DVDs on the subject. And Dr. Kaufman, you also have, let's see, a B.S., I believe, in forestry. Is that correct?
Correct.
And then an M.S. in forest science. Is that correct?
Correct.
Okay. And one quick question. You're probably aware of what's been happening in Texas and New Mexico this week. Record cold temperatures, and they can't seem to access their natural gas, so they're all sitting in Texas and New Mexico freezing. And it seems to me that our natural gas reserves are abundant, but for some strange reason they can't access those reserves. Is that a little preview of what is yet to come from the progressive movement?
Yes, I think it's a real preview of what's about to come. And let me explain. I don't know everything about the New Mexico issue. I do know that they're running out of gas, and they're running out of gas because they haven't been drilling enough, and they're probably, I do not know this for a fact, but probably because they have not been allowed to by the federal government, just like any new drilling on offshore oil is not being permitted by the Department of Interior. There have been, what we're seeing here is an absolute war by Obama on the fossil fuel industry here in this country. I mean, he is literally trying to destroy it. Every step that he has made at this particular point in time is targeting fossil fuel industry in this country to destroy it, so that it forces us to go to his alternative energy concepts. I want to get back to the fossil fuel and natural gas issue in a moment, but let me just say this about the alternative energy. It cannot work. They've been doing it for about 6 or 7 years in Europe. Spain, for instance, has been doing it now 12 years, and it's been an utter and absolute failure. They are literally abandoning those projects because it costs so much, 3 to 8 times as much to develop energy using wind power and solar power than it does coal and natural gas. And as a consequence, as their Europeans are having problems, they're literally cutting off all of the aid that they're giving to these developers and so forth, and they're going bankrupt because it doesn't work. Wind doesn't always blow, and the sun doesn't always shine. And as a consequence, you have to have huge, huge, huge areas set aside for wind farms and solar farms in order to make up for the difference where the wind's not blowing and the sun's not shining. And we don't have the storage capacity with our technology right now to make it work. So it's an utter failure. It will never work, and yet Obama is committed. This is where I'm saying that they can be so blinded because of their ideology that they will not look at reality and acknowledge the real world. And this is one of the areas that is classic. We are seeing Obama trying to destroy the fossil fuel industry. I mean, literally, actively destroying it because he wants to have his alternative fuels. And he says somehow if we put enough money into it, it's going to work. That's always their idea. If you just put enough money into it, it'll work. It will never work with the current technology that we have today or the foreseeable future. And we are going to be, all of us are going to be in the same shape as New Mexico is right now if we do not get rid of that ideology. What bothers me is the fact that we have enough oil and natural gas in our offshore deposits as well as the shale oil deposits in Colorado, Utah, and Wyoming to supply the United States with all the natural gas we want for at least 400 years, for all the petroleum that we want for 500 years. There is more natural gas and petroleum in the United States than in all the other reserves in the world, although they're really finding some other ones just like ours here in the country, so that probably won't be true for very long. There is oil. We're awash with oil. We're awash with natural gas. So what did Obama do just on Tuesday before Christmas? He announced through the Bureau of Land Management that he was going to do a study to determine what of the 230 million acres of the Bureau of Land Management should be put aside as wild lands. That's the same as wilderness, but they don't want to call it wilderness because that has to be approved by Congress. They want to call it wild lands and withdraw any ability to develop oil, natural gas, gold, you name it, even grazing on these lands that they declare wild lands. And I'm waiting to see, and it's going to be probably the end of this year before we have the first clue, see where they draw these wild lands, and I'll bet you that they're going to be right over the top of these shale oil deposits to prevent the United States from actually gaining access to this oil and natural gas. It is criminal what's going on in the White House right now. Absolutely criminal. Let alone evil. It's evil beyond anything any president's ever done in the past to the American people.
Well, when you go up into Yreka and you head up to their meeting up there, you will be right just about at the edge of the Siskiyou Crest, they want to have be the Siskiyou Crest National Monument. And I'm sure
right.
You're up to speed on the monument issue.
Oh, yes.
That particular 600,000-acre hunk of land actually is the largest chromium deposit in, I think it's in all of North America. And just magically, they want to make a monument there, so you can't mine, you can't, you know, none of those resources will be used. We have to buzz off to another
break. Let me
break
here. We're going to take a break?
We are, and when we come back, you start us off.
I want to address that, what you were talking about, just a little bit more.
Outstanding. You are listening to KCNR 1460 AM. You can reach us at 605-4567 when we return. We are at Shasta Redding, the home of Free Fire Media.
Welcome back to We the People, brought to you by the Redding Tea Party. We're talking to Dr. Michael Kaufman, author of Rescuing a Broken America, Why America is Deeply Divided, basically the difference between two philosophical belief systems. And Dr. Kaufman, before we get in any deeper, can you just give some folks some contact information? Should we forget toward the end of our last part of the show, a website, a phone number, any way to contact you?
Sure. The website that I will give you will take you to some others as well, but the rescuingamericabook.com is our primary one for the discussion of this program. We also have a website called EPI, for Environmental Perspectives Incorporated, epi-us.com. And it has all kinds of contact information and so forth to get a hold of us on those sites. Our 800 number, it's not 800 per se, but it's 877-271-7639. 877-271-7639. That's toll free. Before the break, during the last break, you had mentioned that not all progressives or not all liberals are progressives, and that is true. That's a good point to make, and I forgot to make that. Progressives are a unique brand, the far left part of the liberal chain, as it were. And most of the liberals are liberal because that's what they have been indoctrinated with through school and through our programming on television and, you know, a variety of other things. And one thing that's been very, very satisfying to me is that when they read this book, they do not put it down, because I don't attack liberals in general, just the progressive mentality. Most liberals want to do the right thing. Most liberals are teachable in the sense that they will understand the other side of the story when you tell it to them and react accordingly. And I've gotten many comments from liberals who voted for Obama in the 2008 election that really now are having their eyes open to the realization how wrong they were, and really appreciate this book for what it has done for them in educating them. Now, the other thing that I was talking about prior to the last break was the New Mexico natural gas issue and all that goes along with it. And you mentioned national landmarks and so forth. It's ironic that that is what President Clinton did in 1996. It stood on, or actually seated in front of a table at the edge of the south rim of the Grand Canyon and signed in the Escalante Grand Staircase National Monument that basically locked up the largest clean coal deposit in the world. They were just starting to develop it. It's clean coal. It doesn't have all the sulfur and so forth in it that the eastern coal has. And he basically locked it up with one signature in that one landmark. And I'm sure that's what's going to happen in the landmark situation there in Northern California as well. They're trying to lock up that chromium. I can almost guarantee it. When you start to see these landmarks and where they're located over mineral-rich areas, you begin to realize that they are deliberately locking these mineral-rich label or areas up so that we can't gain access to them and help our standard of living and everything else that goes along with it. And I'm almost hesitant to do this, but I want to mention something that a person by the name of Wayne Hage talked to me about 7 or 8 years ago before he died of cancer. He was actually writing a book on this and had all the documentation and so forth. He basically said that on these federal lands, what is happening is that they're being used as collateral for our national debt. And the fact that Hillary Clinton went over to China to convince them that their investment in our bonds and so forth was secure makes me believe that what he says is true, because all of a sudden China changes tune, and I believe, I really honestly believe this, I don't have any evidence of it right now. He never finished his book because he died, and the evidence that is there, I don't know where it is at this particular point in time, but I'm very concerned that they're using our mineral-rich areas in this country as collateral for our national debt.
Well, that makes perfect sense, because when you get up into places like, like Siskiyou County, they're coming after them from every angle. You've got the monument trying to be imposed. You have they're trying to take out their dams up there, so they want to rewild the river, and then the Department of Fish and Game. I was just in a meeting on Friday. They are after those guys every single second. They want stream bed alteration permits, the 1600 permits. They want them for everything. There's a guy, I mean, just to talk about how stupid this is, there's a guy who lives just a little bit west of town here, wants to build a 720-square-foot house.
you'd think that would take,
That's a pretty small house.
He started out with a bigger house, but it was kind of like, okay, fine, if I, change after change after change after hassle after hassle after hassle. Turns out that the whole big holdup is because he had a shack on his property, a little shack. But he couldn't take the shack down because in order to take the shack down, he had to cross an old stream bed. It had no water in it, but it was considered technically a stream bed, and he would have needed a 1600 permit for destroying the stream bed just to haul the shack through there, to take it down before he could build his house.
Yeah.
So for a year, this guy has tried different permits, he's, changed his plans over and over and over. I spoke with the county administrator the other night, and he said, ugh, we just finally made that go away. And I thought, no, that was the holdup. So you have some of these rules. Obviously, they don't want people just ripping apart all our streams and all that kind of stuff. But for heaven's sakes, you can't move a rock.
Yeah, I know, and that's one of the things that if you have this pantheistic idea that Mother Nature is a goddess Gaia, whatever the case is, and believe that you must protect nature at all costs, even when it costs humans a lot, then you have this kind of unending stream of regulations that really don't make any sense whatsoever. And it's ironic, if you go back, and I'll be explaining this in my discussions, in my talks, it comes from basically the United Nations. I say that very tongue-in-cheek at this point. It started with the establishment of the Adirondack Park Agency back in 1973 or 71, also here in Maine with a project called LIRC. In both cases, the state took over all land use decisions of a huge area. In the case of the Adirondack State Park, it was over 6 million acres, over half of which, was privately owned land. And they regulate that land down to what color you can put to paint your house, how big you can have it, whether you can have two stories. Every single piece has to be approved by the Adirondack State Park Agency. It can take up to 5 to 10 years to get a permit to build a home within that. Now, if you're an environmentalist, you can get it in 6 months. That's the problem with these things, is it leaves the door wide open to corruption. Every single time you'll see how the process is corrupted because these faceless bureaucrats have too much power. But nonetheless, that was so successful that was picked up by the United Nations and actually taken to the United Nations as a model of how land use should be governed. And it created what is called Agenda 21 out of the United Nations that was introduced to the world in the 1992 Earth Summit in Rio de Janeiro. President Clinton took that because Bush signed Agenda 21. President Clinton took over the next year, of course, and President Clinton created the President's Council on Sustainable Development, which was the implementing instrument of Agenda 21. It doesn't say Agenda 21, but you will find that the two documents are basically the same. They created what's called Sustainable America that was then picked up by every federal agency. They have a whole pile of sub-documents. I'll go through those a little bit in my discussions next week. But what they have done is taken this mentality of the Adirondack State Park, put it into an international agenda that's 40 chapters long. It covers every aspect of your life, every aspect of your life. Then that was transferred to Clinton's President's Council on Sustainable Development. They created Sustainable America, which now is in every agency, and all of your federal funding for these different projects has to go through this screening process of sustainability. And you will be astonished if you come to my talks next week of what they mean by sustainable development. It is shocking beyond belief. It has nothing to do with the real world and everything to do with spirituality and Mother Earth. It is mind-boggling what their ultimate end game is by these regulations.
And it's all about power and control.
It's all about power and control.
Bottom line,
right.
It's all about power and control. And so a lot of times when people, I think when we talk to you next week, let's kind of plan to focus on that whole Agenda 21 thing, because we do a lot, all of the different Tea Party groups in Northern California, we do a lot of work on that, and also the ICLEI, the Local Government for Sustainability.
ICLEI, yes.
Yeah, and so how the ICLEI guys are into everything. I think people are starting to notice when they hear the word sustainable, when they hear smart growth.
It's not necessarily a good term.
Yeah, that's a kind of a buzzword for we're going to take your private property. If we could sort of make a mental note that that'll be the topic next week, because there are a lot of people, especially people that are in office, that have not heard of Agenda 21, and when they do, when they hear it's the UN, they kind of blow it off.
Right.
Because
let me tell you, there are 17 million pages on the internet about Agenda 21. It's not like it doesn't exist or it's some meaningless document off to the side. It is the cornerstone of this whole agenda.
Exactly. And we've got a link for people that are going, what the heck are they talking about? If you go to writingteaparty.com and look at the Issues tab, under Issues, one of the issues is Agenda 21 and ICLEI. Another one is about monuments. We have all those different issues under there. If you would like more information, there are a lot of links there also that will punch up with that. So let's finish off the last part of our talk here about that, if you would like. Let's take a break just a wee bit early, and then we'll run right straight to 10 o'clock so we can get all your final thoughts. You're listening to KCNR 1460 AM, Shasta Redding, the home of Free Fire Media.
It's We the People, brought to you by the Redding Tea Party. You got maybe 5 minutes to call if you've got a question. The number is 605-4567. If you want to follow us online, go to readingteaparty.com, click on Radio Show. We're going to wrap up our second hour here talking to Dr. Michael Kaufman, author of Rescuing a Broken America, Why America is Deeply Divided.
Before we do that, though, I need to put in a little bit of a plug. Tomorrow night at the Redding Tea Party meeting, we meet at 6 o'clock every Monday night at Bonneview Baptist Church, 2570 South Bonneview, down by the Fire Hall and Wind River Mini Mart, if you know where that is. Tomorrow night we have the Pacific Legal Foundation coming. Their subtitle on their website is Rescuing Liberty from Coast to Coast. They were established in March of 1973. They are the oldest and most successful public interest legal organization that fights for limited government, property rights, individual rights, and a balanced approach to environmental protection. Pretty much all the things we like.
Balance. Gee, there's a thought.
Yeah, we don't have a lot of that. So that's what we're doing tomorrow night, and then we will be visiting with Dr. Kaufman on February the 14th, so gear up for that, and he will have the entirety of our program from 6 to 8, or as long as he cares to stay. He does have to catch a plane the next morning at the crack of dawn.
And he will have plenty of books for sale on the 14th, and if not, you can order one that night.
Absolutely. So, Dr. Kaufman, we're back to you. Tell us everything you ever wanted to tell us, and you have 12 minutes to do it. No pressure.
Yeah, no pressure. Yeah, I could easily talk for 5 hours. My voice wouldn't last that long, but I could easily talk for 5 hours on these subjects because there is so much complexity and so forth. And you already you're probably getting some information overload that just prevents you from being able to absorb too much more. But understand that there is a major agenda to do exactly what we've been talking about. To create a world government to basically bankrupt the United States, force them into that world government, create a common one world currency and so forth. This has been the dream of all despots for thousands of years. This is nothing new as far as man's attempt to try to create a total world dominant. You know, the Persian Empire, all of these empires were designed to basically control all the known world of the day. And this is no different, except this involves the entire world, and it's based on a false premise. That is what is so dangerous on this, is that they have gotten into positions of power, and as a consequence, the President of the United States, the Congress of the United States, the state legislatures, the district attorneys or the state attorney generals, all of these people are working off of an ideology that cannot, will not, will never work, because it's based on false premises of human nature and a variety of other things. And there's no way you can convince these people to the contrary. They are, if you talk to them about the real world, they'll just look at you like you're ignorant, ignoramus. Because they believe that they're super intelligent, they believe they have the answers to everything, they believe that you, as a common person or just a minion out there that don't have really any clue as to really what's going on. They think that it's beyond belief. You need to see some of this arrogance in different progressives at the state level, local level, even sometimes the federal level. They just believe that you're a piece of dirt. And as a consequence, you should support their radical good intentions and so forth and their intelligence. They're far superior than anybody else. They're complex thinkers and so forth. And really, I'm really being hard on them. Understand that. But it's such a dangerous situation right now. You have to recognize that they'll tell you anything that they think that you want to know, and then either implement a false premise that doesn't work, i.e. the stimulus plan that we suffered from this past year, or will go off and do whatever they want to anyway after they've gotten your approval. And we're building a government on thin air that just will not hold up, and it will collapse. And usually when that happens, like we saw with the Roman Empire, the Roman Republic, when Julius Caesar took the power and then transferred that to Augustus Caesar, all of a sudden you went in from a republic to an empire, and you know the history that followed that at that particular point in time.
We're seeing a resurgence of state governors starting to really step up.
Yes.
And fight back and take the control over their state from the federal government. That's kind of a positive spin on it.
Yeah, I think maybe that's where we should wind up this discussion here this morning. I've seen all kinds of positive signs. All we need, folks, is one election in which you have an informed, educated electorate, basically putting the people in the office that have an understanding of constitutional principles. Why did the Founding Fathers write the Constitution the way they did? And I'll be explaining more of that in my talks. There's a very good reason, because they wanted to have government small. Well, why did they want to have government small? Because government is nothing but raw power. And if you have all government concentrated within a few people's hands, either elected or non-elected bureaucrats, what you find is tyranny that begins to creep in. It's just, that's the way it is. And they just suffered that under the King of England, and they were bound to break up government power into as many different institutions as possible. That's why we have the tripartite system of the state legislature, the presidency or the executive branch, and the judicial branch, to divide those powers so no one part of it can gain control over all the rest. And then you had at the state level, the federal level, the state level, and the local level. So power was broken up, and government was very, very, very inefficient. And now all we hear constantly is that we must make government more efficient. Don't believe that. That's dogma that's going to destroy this country if it ever happens, because once government becomes efficient, the only way that it can become efficient is to take your civil liberties away from you and put it in the hands of faceless bureaucrats. That's the only way that government can be efficient. They have to have the power to do something, and that power constitutionally is given to the people, not to them. And as a consequence, if they ever get that power, we are cooked. We must maintain our civil liberties and so forth, and the only way that we can do that is to keep the government inefficient as possible.
Well, you've said the thing that we've noticed the most when we first started with the Tea Party a couple of years ago, actually this month, 2 years ago, we were, all of us really knew, didn't really know what we were up against, but really knew something was haywire. People were really angry, wanted to give people a voice. And then over the last 2 years, what we've come to figure is that our elected officials really have very little power. And what's happened is that the Department of, Department of XYZ, whatever they are, those departments actually are what are wielding the power. So when, like, I sat in a meeting with our senator, and it would have been our assemblyman, but he was down in Gerber changing a hot water tank that blew up. But here these two guys are trying to help landowners who are being blown down by the federal government, and yet they're trying to look for strategy. And here people think, yes, they're really being beaten up by their elected officials, but in reality, many of our elected officials are in many of the positions. They don't have the power that we really need them to have. They're responsible to us, and yet they can't help us oftentimes.
And you can't vote the departments
yes.
out of office.
That's
there
the thing.
Is the key thing. You can't vote these people out of their positions. And the state of California, the legislature has done this, has actually passed so many laws now that they have this huge, huge bureaucracy that basically runs independent of any elected official and basically having almost absolute power over their jurisdiction, over the people in which they execute that jurisdiction. And that is tyranny, folks, and it was our government was never set up to be able to do that, never. Our founders would be turning over in their graves if they saw this happening because, as Jefferson said, our government is becoming as venal and as oppressive as the one from which we have just separated. We're already having laws that the colonists actually rebelled from. Our laws are more stringent than even the King of England put upon the colonies. And until we realize that and begin to disassemble that structure, and it could happen in one election. It literally could. If we really had an informed electorate and got these progressives out of office and put in intelligent people who understood constitutional principles, we could stop this in one election and begin the... It's going to take generations. You can't do it overnight. I mean, we've got things in place that you just can't rip out or would destroy our society. But we can begin to disassemble that architecture that could bring so much tyranny to us if we're not careful.
And Dr. Kaufman, all religion aside, just speaking in terms of, again, those third world conditions, economic conditions, what do you think of what's happening in Egypt and the potential for that in the Western Hemisphere?
Well, anytime you see a portion of the world destabilizes, what's happening now in the Muslim countries of the Mideast, you have a lot of uncertainty, and what concerns me is that Egypt is a sovereign nation. We can't tell it what to do, and we shouldn't tell it what to do. The problem is that we hope to have a government that is reestablished that is not jihadist in nature as what happened in Iran and Syria and so forth, that we're able to work with that through an elected form of government and be able to keep the Suez Canal open and the pipelines open. What could happen, and this is what's really scary, is that 4 million barrels of oil a day flow through Egypt, either the Suez Canal or over their pipeline, that if that were shut off, would shut off Europe from oil. They would become desperate. And as a consequence, even though we do not get much oil from Saudi Arabia and so forth, most of ours comes from Venezuela, Mexico, and Canada. All of a sudden, Europe would be coming into Canada and Mexico and Venezuela for our oil, and oil prices would skyrocket. In fact, I'm thinking they're going to skyrocket anyway, up to $5 to $6 a gallon. And when that happens, it's going to crush our economy in a way that we just cannot even imagine right now. So be praying. Whatever. Just pray and hope that whatever happens in Egypt will not be contagious to the other nations that are surrounding it that literally could cut off oil supply from the Mideast.
Well, and, you know, the same situation we face on whether it's our family or our neighborhood or our town, it doesn't matter what size, people need to stand up.
Yes.
And not stand up and be angry, but stand up and be productive. And that's what we encourage with Reading Tea Party all the time, and the groups we're affiliated with up and down the state, is do something. Get yourself into activities that will make a difference. Go to these, we go to all the boards, and we're really plugging into the boards.
Excellent.
And commissions, listening for words like sustainable, smart growth, all that kind of stuff, because we know right behind that are the rabbit hutches.
Yeah, right, unfortunately.
You know, when you say dense housing or whatever, that doesn't sound as scary. You know, I think rabbit hutches really.
I mean, do people really want to have to live in 300 square feet?
Yeah, no. We have about a minute left, so we are going to do an appropriate send off for you, and we're going to go out on this 2-hour segment with a nice little song called "God and Guns."
And we want to thank
in
you
your honor.
And thank you very much for being here.
Well, you're
You've
welcome.
Got a busy couple of weeks ahead, so we're thrilled to be having you in Northern California, and a thank you to
Chandler and Nate and for helping us out. And we're
it's been a crazy morning because we've made some changes, but we want to thank everybody.
Absolutely, and we're really promoting the logging conference breakfast for Thursday morning so they can hear you. Looking at Wairika on Friday night, Reading Tea Party Monday night the 14th. You can hear Dr. Kaufman some more. And on the 13th, he'll be on the radio with us. So this is Dr. Kaufman Week officially in Northern California. Thank you so much, sir. Have a safe travel. We will see you soon. You're listening to KCNR 1460 AM, Shasta Reading, the home of free...